twisted, trapped, tangled.
Follow me.
Help. It hurts.
I can't get free.
So follow me.
It's disgusting how these ropes creep up to my head and bind my eyes. There is so much envy. I'm never going to have enough. I'm never going to be enough. So why do I even bother? I'm never going to trust God like they do. I'm never going to know him like she does. And I'm never going to worship him like he can. I'm constantly comparing myself to others. Why would God want what little I have to offer? I have nothing. I am twisted.
Follow me.
It's terrifying how these ropes slither over my body and pierce my heart. They've infiltrated every part of my life, and everywhere I look, I see their threatening shadows. I'm so, so afraid. I am so scared that this pain will never end, and that I'll be lost in this loneliness forever. Why would God want me? I do not live as one with a spirit of love, but have adopted a spirit of fear. It's all I have left. I'm trapped.
Follow me.
I refuse to see the ropes that bind me. They do not bind me. They do not pierce me. I am free. I am upstanding and trapped. Others may have need of God's mercy and forgiveness, but not I. I am strong. I am wise. I have no need of him. How dare someone tell me that I am ensnared? How dare they think that I am in need of help? For if what they say is true, then I am unworthy of his love. If I am trapped, why would God want me? I have so many hidden questions and confused thoughts. I am tangled.
So follow me. I took it all. I died for it all. Lay down your burdens. They are no longer yours to bear. You have sinned against me, but I will have mercy on you. So come to me, and I will give you rest. You are not twisted. You are not trampled. You are not tangled anymore. For I have claimed you as my own. You are my child. You are loved. You are mine. So come and follow me.
Powerful reminder of the different ropes and nets that create entanglement with our own hearts. That last hymn that we sung had that phrase that Christ has regarded my helpless state and has shed his own blood for my soul. As we finish up this series on Follow Me, the challenges that we just saw and the ropes and those things that so easily entangles us and besets us and creates that oppression, there's something about this, though, that we need to be challenged with. Because you see, what ends up happening is when we think about this concept of follow me, we have got to be able to challenge our motive. We've got to be able to examine, why do we choose to follow him? And yes, it is true, absolutely, that initially, in many ways, it comes out of our own despair. We cry out like Peter did, sinking in the water, Lord, save me. And we understand that. But what we need to understand in the whole concept of follow me is that the reality is that follow me is not so much what I can get. Follow me is not the reality of what I get or what it's doing for me. But follow me is the reality to see who I find. That's the point of this whole series. That's the journey. Follow me is not the destination. It's not the end game. It is the journey, the process, the evolution, the growth, the transformation daily of our lives. That's what we need to look at. When we see that mercy and that grace extended here, when we see those entangled ropes being set free, we understand the reality that that is the initial moment of salvation. Those circumstances draw us to the power of God's grace and His love. And those are reality in our life, but it's not the end. It is just the beginning. Follow me is a journey, is a growth. It's not what I can get. It's who I can find, who I look for. My dad used to go away when he flew, and when he would come home, he'd bring little trinket and gifts. To this day, I regret the small, metal, tiny Volkswagen Beetle cars that he brought back in the early 60s. Because I went online one time and read that they're worth thousands of dollars. And I had about five or six of them, but at that time, we had no idea what they meant. Who cares? They got trashed, dirty, thrown away. My dad would bring back trinkets. So I thought, you know, I'm going to be a good dad and I'll follow the same thing. So when I traveled for Grace Bible College, I would come back and bring trinkets for my kids. And they were brilliant, well thought out trinkets. I would go, when we went to the Grand Canyon, I would pick up rocks from the Grand Canyon floor. And I would bring them back to my kids. And I would say, this is from the Grand Canyon. You have never seen it. Look at this rock. And of course, my kids are looking at the rock and realizing immediately, even at age four, that that really cost Dad nothing. He picked up a rock. How do I know it wasn't on the side of the road by the 76 truck stop or something? But what evolved is that when I started to come home from those trips, instead of my kids running up and excited to see me, they would come up and they would say, the first words out of their mouth was, Dad, what did you get for me? It wasn't, Dad, would you share with us the spiritual life that you were able to be a part of transforming on your trip with these college students? Dad, would you share us the spiritual growth that the college students went through in a dynamic interchange with the Holy Spirit in their life? No, it was none of that. It was, Dad, what did you get for me? And I would say, well, I got you this keychain for a car that you never will get. You ungrateful children. You know, they say history repeats itself, and I'm quite certain that's pretty much what happened to my dad. It wasn't so much about him, it was about what he was bringing me. And in this series about Follow Me, we want to shift the focus from what Christ is bringing me, what Christ is giving me, and who he is. That's the reality of this particular focus. We've used this quote by Joe Stowell in his book, Following Christ. And we've used this kind of as the thematic quote of how to identify and what we're looking at. And he tells us to think of ourselves as followers of Christ. And so we do that because it keeps our focus on Christ and holds us accountable for how we live. It's interesting that this idea of motive and this idea of what am I going to get is such a permeated philosophy and religion and Christianity today. It's such an area that we really need to be challenged with. When Joe Stowell talks about it, holds us accountable for how we live, it's the focus on Christ, not necessarily on what he's done for me. Yes, we know what he's done for me. Yes, we know every day we're reminded of those burdens being lifted. Every day, Paul tells us, renew that inward man, because every day you need to fight that battle, and every day you need to come to grips, and we're reminded of God's grace every moment of our life, and that is absolutely essential. But the ultimate objective of Follow Me is to be able to transition our focus onto who Christ is, and as we do that, we gain the ability to re-gift. We gain the ability to share our life story. We gain the ability to tell others who Christ is. That is the next and final step of follow me. And that's the challenge that we face. We use a book by, or a video series by Kirk Cameron in our one of our theology classes on evangelism at Grace Bible College. And in the way of the master, Kirk Cameron says, the tragedy of modern evangelism is that we have reduced and degenerated the gospel presentation down to an issue of life enhancement. When we think of the idea of follow me, we think of the idea of find Jesus, get saved, life will get better. You'll get blessings, you'll get joy, you'll get happiness, you'll find peace, you'll find healing, everything will get better. You follow Jesus, everything's going to get better, everything in life will be smooth, you'll have God, you have what you want, and everything will follow after that. How's that working for you? You see, the problem with that is it leaves us disillusioned and it leaves us with this emptiness, because that's not how it turns out. I am willing to say, and I don't know this for a fact, but I'd be willing to say that in every one of you this morning who are a Christ follower, if you have prayed a prayer for something, I guarantee somewhere along the line you have been disappointed in the particular answer. I guarantee you have been praying for something and it hasn't happened the way you want it to happen, and it creates disappointment. You see, following Christ is elevating our eyesight above and beyond what he has done for me. And it's transition into who he is. When Paul says, follow me as I follow Christ, he is constantly telling us to remove our eyesight from the things on the earth, Colossians 3, and doing what? Seeking those things which are above. We set our heart and we set our mind. We elevate our eyesight beyond the circumstances and we say, who is Christ? Now, it's important to understand it doesn't minimize the circumstances. It doesn't minimize what we're going through. I don't want to put Billy on the spot, but Bill Jr. is here with us this morning. There's a person that's gone through a lot of pain and suffering in his life. It's that man right there. There are people in your lives that you know are suffering and struggling. It's easy to say, get your eyes off your circumstances and find Jesus. It's real pat to say that. But this morning, we want to look at a story that helps us to identify exactly how to do that. How to move beyond those circumstances that do bind us. And they are continually binding us. They do physically inhibit us. And yet, how do we elevate our minds and get our minds above that and be able to do the next step, which is simply to say, I'm going to share my life, I'm going to share faith, I'm going to move in a way that describes who Jesus Christ is more than what he's done for me. Because when I get to that point, I'll understand, follow me. In Luke chapter 9, Luke tells us, if anyone, that Jesus is talking, and he says to the disciples, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. It's interesting, because when you look at that, he must deny himself. Go back to that slide if we can, guys. He must deny himself, so we deny himself, but notice the next phrase, take up his cross daily. So wait a minute, I'm supposed to deny myself, but then I'm going to take up my cross. What does that mean? What it means is, what Jesus is saying is, you're denying yourself, not your life circumstances, but you're denying yourself the privilege to wallow and suffer and struggle and avoid reality in that struggle. Taking up your cross is understanding this is the reality of my circumstances. I cannot get out of it. But what I'm going to do is I take up that cross, and as I take up that cross, I realize that the very cross I'm picking up to bear is the cross that he already bore for me. Hence, the ropes are set free. That's the truth. Take your Bibles and turn to John chapter 4. In your pew Bible in front of you, it's page 1030. John chapter 4. I have to tell you that one of my favorite chapters in the Gospels is this particular chapter. For a lot of reasons. One of the reasons is I think sometimes in our particular dispensational theology approach, we tend to minimize Jesus Christ and what he did on earth. Minimize in a sense of saying, well, when Christ came, he came for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. He came as the Jewish Messiah. He came to the Jew first. We understand that in a framework of how God chose to operate. The nation of Israel was God's chosen people. Jesus Christ came to be their Messiah. He came to fulfill the covenant. He came to fulfill the promise. He came to the Jew. He says, "This is where I came to." He commissions his disciples. You go to the Jew first. This is your process. I think sometimes in that whole mindset, at least for myself growing up, I kind of had this picture of Jesus for the Jewish people in the Gospels, didn't really relate much to me because he was, after all, for the Jews, coming to the Jews, and he was a Jew. But John chapter 4 revolutionizes that whole thinking. Let me give a couple of freebies here. John chapter 4, it is the longest recorded conversation that Jesus has with an individual. And she's a Gentile, not a Jew. Half-breed, considered even worse than a Gentile. And she's a woman, and she's unclean. The longest recorded conversation is with a Gentile. And so when we look at this passage, we want to look at and see how Jesus is approaching this whole idea of follow me. So look at John, and look at John chapter 4, verse 4. Now he had gone through Samaria. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of the ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey. Yes, he was human. Yes, he got tired. Yes, he knew the physical limitations of the human body. He was tired. He sat down by the well. It was about the sixth hour. Now, we're told a little bit later on that the disciples went on ahead to get some food. So they were ahead to check out, going in to get some food. They were going to bring it back, so Jesus was by himself. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" Now, it's interesting that the first thing that Jesus does is he draws her attention to the thought of grace. Will you give me? Will you give me a drink? So the first thing he does is draws her attention to grace, to the ability to give. And it's interesting that he asks her, "Will you give me?" Now, we always are looking at Jesus, and we're always thinking about Jesus giving and Jesus doing and Jesus coming up here and releasing the shackles of the bondage and what Jesus does through grace and faith, and all of that is factual and all of that is true. But in this story, he begins with asking her, "Will you give me a drink?" The reality of those circumstances, he took initiative. He was ready to move into her life, but the first thing he had to do was to get her to move into his life. So he's moving and he says, "Will you give me to drink?" Now it's interesting, if you stop for just a moment, we talk about sharing our faith. We talk about how do I follow Christ in regifting? This is the first thing. The first thing is just simply talk. Just talk. Just engage in any kind of conversation, any kind of life conversation. You spend time with people around you. Your faith is a relationship, not a religion. Your faith is a dynamic interchange with who? The person of Jesus Christ. So basically, it's just talking. It's an intentionality in conversation. Every single one of us can do that. There is a desperate misnomer in Christianity today that the only people that really can witness effectively are those that are called to be an evangelist. Every single person who lives and breathes and is a Christ follower with Christ in their heart is an evangelist. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, Paul does not say, to those of you who are called to be an evangelist, let that light of the glorious gospel shine so that you may show. He doesn't say that. He says, to all of you, to everyone, that light of the glorious gospel is to show. We are all engaged in evangelism. We are all engaged in pursuing the re-gift. We are all engaged in sharing our faith and sharing who Christ is. That transcends what he does. Now, they're connected. They're connected. But you just engage in a conversation. You get to talk about people. You get to talk about what's happening in people's lives. Now, how do you do that? Well, let me share you a secret. Here is something you want to think about. Every person has a favorite subject. Maybe you've heard this before. Who is every person's favorite subject? Me, right? I am my favorite subject. Even when I'm by myself, which is scary, I'm my favorite subject. You see, get people talking about their lives. Get people engaging and getting, and pretty soon it starts opening up different pathways. And in your mind, you're praying, okay, Lord, there's an opportunity, an open door here. Open it. Allow me to step through. Allow me just simply to share who Christ is in my life. That's all it is, just engaging, just asking, what is your story? Asking about life, asking about family. Everybody loves to talk about family usually, even if it's a struggling family. They even want to talk about that even more because they're desperate to know that someone else has a struggling family somewhere that they can relate to and feel like I'm not alone. You can talk to anyone at any time. Follow me. As Jesus shows us, is being able to engage people where they are at, identifying what they need the most. Famous quote from Mother Teresa said, the hunger for love is much more difficult to remove than the hunger for bread. There's a desperation where Jesus Christ is looking into the heart of this woman, and he's asking her to give him something. It's the focal point of what we've been talking about. A.W. Pink, in his commentary on this chapter, he says that Jesus shows her herself. Check this out. So he's showing her herself. He's going to show her her life. He's going to read into her. This is your circumstances. These are your ropes. These are the things that are oppressing you. Here's what's burdening you. Here's what's overcoming you. He's going to show her herself so that what? So he can reveal himself. And reveal himself beyond just one who loosens the ropes and drops the ropes and says, follow me and drop your net. He wants to go beyond that. He elevates himself and says, look at me. Who am I to you? That's the whole point of follow me. Not follow me in what I can do for you. Not follow me in what I can get for you. Not follow me in what I'm going to challenge you with every day. Not follow me so that burden that you have I can release every day. No, no, no. He's saying follow me so that you can know me. So that you can know who I am. That's salvation. Jesus Christ seeks to take this maddening world. He exposes our desperate condition of sin. He gives to us himself. He feeds our hunger for love. And notice what she says in verse 9. The Samaritan woman said to him, you are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan woman. What does she do immediately? She identifies the difference. She identifies who she is. She identifies who he is. You're a Jew. I'm a Samaritan. You're God. I'm a human. You're perfect. I am not. All right? Let's get all that out of the way. Let's move on. You see, because the reality for individuals and people is it's very difficult to move beyond that, isn't it? It's very difficult to even get anyone, as Conley was showing us, to even admit that there's a need for salvation. The first step in understanding is the reality that there is a difference. But in that difference, Jesus Christ is calling us to follow him in that difference in becoming more like him. So she says, hey, how can you ask me for a drink? The first question she says, how can you ask about this? How can you ask me for a drink? In chapter 3, Jesus, which is the second longest recorded conversation, is with the Jewish Pharisee Nicodemus. Nicodemus asks him the same question. How can this be? Now, Jesus responds to Nicodemus with truth, with theology, with an expression of you must be born again and the truthfulness of this. But with this woman, Jesus is responding with a level of grace. A grace that challenges us and a grace that moves us. And a grace that says, if you choose to know me, you will follow me. As Johnny Moore puts in, grace accepts us as we are, but is too powerful and too transformational to leave us as we are. Think about it just for a moment. Keep that up there for a minute. Grace accepts us as we are. Jesus comes to each of these people. He's not saying to them, okay, you must worship me, you must sing the best praise songs. He's simply saying, look, this is what I can do. So he is identifying what he can do. Let's be honest for a moment, can we? Why did the disciples first follow Jesus? I love Andy Stanley's explanation, because I think sometimes we get caught up in this supernatural, spiritual. They followed Jesus to be like the Messiah. They followed Jesus to gain this spiritual depth and knowledge of God. No, they followed Jesus because the very first thing he did is he got them a lot of fish. So he did something for them. They followed Jesus because this guy got us a lot of fish. There's got to be something more coming up. We need to check this out. And it took a 3-year journey of constantly navigating to what Jesus was doing for them to finally get to the point of who he really is. Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 14, that it is the love of Christ that motivates me. It's not my love for Christ. It's the singular love of Christ. It is an object. It is a descriptor of Christ. The love of Christ. Who is he? What did he do for me? Who is he that he would do that? That's what Paul is saying when he's saying that love motivates me. That challenges me. That puts me. And she's saying, how can you do this to me? How can you even ask me this? You know, she had every reason to ask that. If you do a research of the Samaritan culture, and we won't take much time to do that, but basically, you can go all the way back to 2 Kings chapter 17, and the Assyrians, they came into Israel, and they led away the captives, and in the leading away the captains, they were very brutal. The Assyrians were considered one of the most brutal ancient races of all time. And as they led those Jewish captives away into their own country, they began to take the Jewish women as their wives, as their concubines, as their slaves. And the children produced through those half-breeds were called Samaritans. And as history constantly unfolded itself through the centuries to follow, the Jews hated the Samaritans more and more because they reminded themselves of the Jewish nation, of their weakness, of their failure to follow God originally, and because of the sin the half-breed came about. They did not want to be reminded of that. They did not want to be reminded of failing God in the Old Testament. They did not want to be reminded of God's judgment because of sin. Does that sound familiar to us? We don't like that either. We don't like to be reminded of be sure your sin will find. We don't like that. We don't want to think about those things that are here. And yet that's why the Jews hated the Samaritans so much, because they reminded them of their failure to follow God. It reminded them of their failure to see God for who he really was. And that's Jesus' point to this Samaritan woman. He wants to elevate her eyesight to see him for who he is. It's interesting that for her, he identifies something. Look at verse 18. How can you ask me for a drink? Well, let's look at verse 10. Jesus answered her, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. So she didn't really know. But he's identifying some things for her. And then drop down to verse 16. She says, okay, give me this water. And Jesus says something, go, call your husband, and come back. Now, I was told to never ask a question that you already know the answer to in relationships. Jesus clearly knew the answer to this, but what was he trying to do? The very thing he was trying to do with Adam and Eve. Hey, where are you guys? He knew where they were. What did he need? He needed for them to say, here I am. He needed for her to say, I don't have a husband. And then Jesus said, you know what? You're absolutely right. Not only that, you are right when you say you have no husband, verse 17, 18. The fact is, you have had five husbands. And the man you now have is not your husband. What you have just said is quite true. You've been honest with me. It's interesting, John Ortberg in his book talks about the reality of theologians that are more entranced and more enamored by this woman's lifestyle and their five husbands and debating over all that. We don't know if their husbands had died. We don't know anything about them. What we do know is the current person that she was living with was not her husband, and that's not in God's perfect plan. And Jesus called her out, but you know what? Something is so, he did not call her out on that, did he? He did not judge her on that. He said, look, until you deal with this sin, until you move, he didn't do that. What he just simply said was, what you've told me is true. Here's your life. Here's the picture of who you are. The reality. She was an outcast. She was mocked by everyone. Think about the time that she was going to the well. The scriptures are very clear. John is very adamant. She was going to the well at what time? Noon. Nobody went to the well at noon. You either went early in the morning or you went late in the afternoon, early evening. Why? Because that's when the water was the coolest. No one went to the well at noon because that's when it's the hottest. Why was she there? Because in her circumstances, in her lifestyle, in her behavior, everyone who knew her, everyone that understood her life didn't want to be around her, didn't want to have anything to do with her. I'm pretty sure that when she went in the morning or went in the afternoon or evening, she got all kinds of grief from people around her. The only time she could go and the only time she could feel comfortable was at noon because very few other people would be there. So alone, despised, rejected, and she walks up on the person of Jesus Christ who's sitting there and says, will you give me a drink? She's a woman, she's a Samaritan, and she's unclean. Look at verse 22. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Now here's that dispensational context. This is why Jesus came to the Jew, because through the Jewish nation, had they repented, had they chosen to follow Christ, had they recognized what his death would be, had they chosen to become a chosen race, they would have been used by God to reach into the world and extend God's mercy through them to the entire Gentile world. But they did not. They rejected Christ on the cross, and they rejected the Holy Spirit in the early part of Acts. So God basically said, I'm going to have nothing to do with you. We're done. But notice John, verse 23, yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. There is going to be a time that's going to come. There is going to be something that's going to happen. And so in this woman's life, when we say what we're looking at, follow me, is not what I can get, but who I know. We follow along in this story and look at verse 24. God is spirit, and his worshipers must worship in spirit and in truth. The woman said, I know that Messiah is coming. You see, here's the key in this. The key for this is follow me, know who you have. Not what I'm doing for you, even though that happens daily, but elevate your eyesight over those circumstances and ask yourself, who am I? Am I worthy to be followed, not for what I do for you, but because of who I am? And so the woman said, I know that Messiah is coming. When he comes, he will explain everything to us. And in the message, verse 26 says this, I am he, said Jesus. You don't have to wait any longer or look any further. She was a Gentile. She was not a Jew. She was outside of that perfect plan of God. And yet Jesus Christ said, you don't have to wait any longer. I am the one you're looking for. I am him. Verse 27. Just then. Can you see that? Just then, his disciples arrive on the scene. And what do they find? They find Jesus with an unclean Samaritan woman talking to her. But John is really clear. But no one asked, what? What do you want? Or why are you talking with her? They're already learning. When they blurt out things, they usually get put in their place. They were surprised, but they didn't do anything about it. Then leaving her water jar, verse 28, check this out. The woman went back to the town and said to the people, come, see a man who told me everything I ever did. He knew me. She identifies something that is so intimate here. This man knew everything I did. He knew my heart. He knew my life. He knew who I was. He knew me. You see, follow me. Jesus Christ says, I know you so well. I know everything you've done. I know your heart, and I love you, and I care for you, and I want to be part of your life. You need to know me. You need to know why I love you. You need to know why I'm here. You need to know who I am. Because in knowing who I am takes your sight off of those things around you which bind you and which controls you. And that whole idea, look at verse 39. Many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. What testimony? She'd only been saved about 2 hours. She didn't go to Bible college. What testimony could she possibly have? She just told her story. She just simply told about this man, Jesus Christ. She just simply said, this is who I know. This is how well I know because of this. He told me everything I ever did, she said. So when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them, and he stayed 2 days. And because of his words, many more became believers. Now check out verse 42. This is the last part. They said to the woman, we no longer believe just because of what you said. Now we have heard for ourselves, and we know that this man really is the Savior of the world. Remember that passage in Acts 4 about the disciples? That they had been with Jesus, and they took note. These people in this town took note that this woman had been with Jesus, and they took note. And they said, we no longer believe just because of what you said. We believe because we have found him too. We know him too. And that choice and that decision and the reality of that life becomes the whole journey of follow me. It's not what I can get, but follow me is a journey toward who is Christ. Who is he? What he's done for me is absolutely reality. You cannot escape that. You cannot avoid that. Every day you find it. But you constantly are elevating your eyesight above that. And you're constantly looking at who he is in my life. And Jesus Christ speaks through the cross. That song that was sung, a cross meant to kill becomes my victory. He speaks through that cross. That God loves us so much on our worst days. He loves us more than we can begin to imagine. It's that love that we need to focus on. Not why he loved me, but what is that love? The woman said, he knew me. He knew everything about me. And what she didn't say that has to go through her mind, in spite of that, he still talked to me. He still came to me. He knew me. In spite of these ropes, he knew what was binding me. And in spite of this, he came to me. And he talked to me. And he loved me. Follow me is a conscious choice to understand the motivation of Christ, who he was. Why all of this is possible is dependent on who he is asking that question, follow me. As our praise team comes and leads us in that song, the words in that song are powerful. Following Christ means we come out of hiding. Following Christ means we stop comparing, we stop blaming. Following Christ means that it wasn't what God did or what he didn't do. Following Christ takes me above and beyond the circumstances that surround me. Yes, this is reality. And there are many of you sitting in this room right now that are saying, I have that rope. I am bound. I get it. I know I need to be free. And the reality of that freedom will never come until you're able to move beyond that and you drop the net and you say, who is that man? And I'm going to discover who he is because I don't know him well right now. But every day of my life, I'll know him more. I was profoundly moved this morning talking to one of our elderly community in the hallway right before church. And she said to me, you know, I think sometimes I'm at a point in my life where I'm so much older, I don't really need to be challenged anymore. But every day I'm being challenged for Christ. That's life. Every day, I'm challenged to follow him. Not for what he does, not for who I am or was. Grace is not satisfied with this. Grace says, I'm going to transform. It's too powerful. You're going to be, and you become like me. And in doing so, we tell people, we re-gift. He knew me, and he loved me. Anyway, stand together and sing as we close out. If that's you this morning, we have prayer partners that are willing to meet with you. This bondage in your life is so great and so deep, and you need to talk about that freedom. You need to talk about that Savior that knows you enough that he died for you. That cross needs to become your victory. You come up and talk to me personally. And we'll talk about that relationship with Jesus Christ. We'll talk about what he can do in freeing you to become who he is. If you need prayer for other things, if you need prayer, we have our prayer partners. Follow me. There's a rope. There's a burden. You know of someone else. There's someone in your life that you have got to be able to pray for and share. You want prayer to help you to do that? You come up front. Follow me. It's not for what he does, but for who he is. Follow me.